You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Could J.J. McCarthy of the Michigan Wolverines be the New York Giants quarterback of the future? It's time to take that possibility seriously and discuss it, New York Giants fans. Ed Valentine of Big Blue View here with your Valentine's Views podcast for Monday. Please like, share, and subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts across the Big Blue View radio network. All right, Giants fans, while I was in Indianapolis last week for the NFL Scouting Combine, and since I returned home on Friday, there's been a lot of chatter going around about the rise in draft stock of J.J. McCarthy, Michigan quarterback, and whether the possibility actually exists that the New York Giants could select McCarthy at number 6 or earlier in the 2024 NFL draft. And the first thing when I think about that is this. When you look at the situation, the reality of it is that a lot of credible members of the media, this is not smoke coming from a bunch of wannabe reporters, a bunch of people on the internet just babbling. These reports, this discussion is coming from credible media members who have access to these general managers, who have access to these coaches, who talk to organizations all the time, who have their fingers on the pulse of what these teams are thinking. And they're not always right. But we're hearing enough reports, we're hearing enough chatter from credible media members that we have to take seriously the possibility that J.J. McCarthy could be in play for the New York Giants as the pick at number 6 in the 2024 NFL draft. I know that some people get upset by that thought. I know that some people think McCarthy's a second round pick. There are still people who think Daniel Jones should have been a third round pick. Whatever. The reality of it is that quarterbacks get overdrafted. Quarterbacks, because the position is the most important one in football, because you can't win at a high level in the NFL without a top tier guy, quarterbacks get overdrafted. Teams do what they have to do to get a guy that they think can eventually play at a championship level. And I understand there are questions about McCarthy because of his volume. I took a look at the top 6 or 7 quarterbacks in the draft the other day at Big Blue View, and the reality of it is that J.J. McCarthy has thrown far fewer passes than all of those top guys, than Caleb Williams, than Bo Nix, than Jaden Daniels, fewer passes than even Drake May, fewer passes than Spencer Rattler or Michael Penix. But the other flip side of that is, isn't the game about winning? J.J. McCarthy was a winner in high school. J.J. McCarthy was 27-1 as the starting quarterback at Michigan. J.J. McCarthy just helped the team win a national title. He's played a lot of important games. He's played college football playoff games. He's played at the highest level in college that you can possibly play at. He's succeeded at that level. Those things are important. And McCarthy is a guy who, for me, you know, being a winner, is how quarterbacks are judged. Eli Manning won at the most important times. He won two Super Bowls. He had two great Super Bowl runs. That is largely what he's remembered for. Quarterbacks are judged by wins. They're judged by championships. They're judged by deep playoff runs. And I think that the fact that McCarthy has always been a winner has got to be part of the discussion. I'm not saying I would draft him. I'm not advocating for that at this point, but I think that it has to be part of the discussion when you talk about J.J. McCarthy. I think that when you look at McCarthy, there are a lot of things physically to like. He's big enough. He measured a little bit over 6'2 at the combine, almost 220 pounds. That's about 15 pounds bigger than he was, you know, last season at Michigan. So he's big enough. I think Daniel Jones came into the league somewhere around 220 pounds or so. So McCarthy's big enough. He's not the biggest guy. He's not 6'5 or 6'6, but, you know, and he's not 240 pounds. He's not Josh Allen sized, but he's big enough. There are a lot of physical things to like about McCarthy. When I watch him, I see a lot of quality NFL throws on his tape. I see some throws into tight windows, both in the pocket and on the move. I see a lot of accuracy on the short throws, intermediate throws, what I mean by that isn't just the balls getting completed. I see a lot of throws given to receivers in stride on the numbers, where they can catch it in stride, where they can run with it, where they can create the incredibly important yards after catch that everybody seems to seek. I see toughness. I see leadership from McCarthy. You see the ability for him to run the football. You don't want him, you know, he's not Josh Allen. He's not Lamar Jackson. You don't want him, you know, running the ball between the tackles. You're not going to design a ton of runs for him, although you can use him in the designed quarterback run game some. But McCarthy can make plays with his feet. He can get out of the pocket and get you a first down. He's not going to have the spectacular Jaden Daniels type runs, but he can do those things. You see enough from McCarthy that you can understand how an NFL team could talk themselves into thinking or could fall in love with McCarthy enough to take him early, try to develop him. He's a 21-year-old kid with a lot of physical skills, with intelligence, with leadership, with a championship background. You can see how an NFL team would think that all of that would translate. And the reality of it is, the more you hear, the more you talk to people, the more you read, the more you study. You look at the Giants at 6, and then you look at the Atlanta Falcons. You look at who I think have the 8th pick. You look at Minnesota with the 11th pick, Denver with the 12th pick. You know, some people don't want to hear it, but J.J. McCarthy is not getting out of the top 12. If you want J.J. McCarthy, if the Giants are looking at the situation and feeling like they have to have a quarterback, and I'm not 100% convinced that they think they need to do it in the first round, I think they need to come out of this draft with a quarterback they think could be the replacement for Daniel Jones beginning in 2025, because I think that's where we are with Daniel Jones. 1 year of guaranteed money left on his contract, long injury history, still debating what he is, what he isn't, who's to blame for the failures of most of his first 5 seasons. Honestly, I think that for the New York Giants, it could well be time for Joe Shane and Brian Daboll to get their guy, to reset the quarterback clock, to try to build around a different young quarterback on a rookie contract, you know, for 4 or 5 years, depending on whether you're able to get a guy in the first round and whether you use the 5th-year option, all of those things that you deal with down the line with a rookie quarterback contract. But I think for the Giants. This feels like the time. It feels like the right situation to make a move, to put themselves in a position to move to a post-Daniel Jones era. And the reality of it is, J.J. McCarthy's going in the top 12. If the Giants want J.J. McCarthy, they're going to have to make a move to do that at six. With the teams lurking behind them who might want a quarterback and know that the Giants are interested in a quarterback, those teams might easily be willing to move up to four at, you know, pick that's currently owned by Arizona, or to five, a pick that's owned by the LA Chargers, might definitely or easily be willing to try to make that move to get McCarthy. So the Giants might have to move to four to get McCarthy if that's what they want to do. That would have seemed crazy a month ago. Doesn't seem crazy now. You know, we'll see what happens as we get closer and closer to the draft. But I think that you have to come to terms with the reality of whether McCarthy's your favorite quarterback in this class or not. It may not be possible for the Giants to get Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels or Drake May, commonly thought of as the top three. If they want a quarterback, they may have to make a swing earlier than you would have thought for J.J. McCarthy, or simply cross their fingers and hope that they can get a Spencer Rattler or a Bo Nix or a Michael Penix on day two. And if you really want a quarterback, that's a tough place to be in, is just kind of crossing your fingers and hoping, you know, that a guy falls to you at 39 or 47. So I think that Giants fans, you know, my advice would be just come to terms with the fact that it could be McCarthy if the Giants make a quarterback swing. And they could have to, you know, manipulate the draft board to make that happen. All right, Giants fans, another thing that's great about being in Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine is the people that you get to talk to, people that you get to catch up with. The other day I did an interview with former Big Blue View contributor Dan Pizzuta. I hope you guys check that out either wherever you listen to podcasts or on our YouTube channel. Another interview that I had a chance to do was with one of my favorite NFL writers, one of the wittier guys out there who covers the sport, guy who has always has a different take, different opinion, different angle on whatever he writes about. That's Mike Tannier, formerly of Football Outsiders and formerly of The Messenger. Both of those now, sadly and unfortunately, defunct publications. Mike now runs his own Substack called The Two Deep Zone. Had a chance to sit down and chat with Mike for a while at the Combine. And up next is that conversation. So I hope you guys enjoy that. All right, Giants fans, a little treat for you guys today. I'm joined now by Mike Tannier, formerly of Football Outsiders, formerly of The Messenger, and I'm nicely referring to Mike as the killer of publications these days, since both of those places no longer exist. How you doing, Mike? Thanks for hopping on.
I'm glad to be here. I am become Death, the destroyer of websites.
Well, we hope that your own venture, your own Substack that you are starting now, fares better than those two places.
I sure hope so, because I think if that goes out of business, it means I'm dead. When you're working for yourself and you can't fire yourself, there's only one way it really goes out of business.
Yeah, you know, I kind of stepped on that one a little bit. But hey, I appreciate you coming on. And, you know, we're sitting out here, sitting in the lobby at the Indiana Convention Center, looking outside at the sunshine, mm-hmm. and a beautiful church, and it's nice to be here in Indy again. And do you have any you've been here for a couple days, any takeaways, anything that you've learned so far over the last couple days?
Really, today was a great day to get to know a lot of these defensive backs. And really, the last couple of days, we've been talking to almost exclusively defensive players. And I'm impressed, first of all, by the athletic skills of these guys. And when you look at them on tape nowadays, you see how much more refined they were than the guys I saw 10 years ago, where it was like, well, the defensive end is huge and fast, and the defensive tackle is a mountain, and the cornerback is fast. And when you interviewed them, they kind of grunted at you. And now we get these guys who can talk. These young men speak eloquently about football, about life, and things like that. And that's one of the reasons I come here, because you have to go through. There's a lot of boring stuff in these interviews, and there's a lot of boring questions and boring answers. But you start to get a sense of who these young men are, and they're really unique individuals. And this is going to be a great draft class, particularly at positions like cornerback and I think at edge as well.
Mm-hmm. I have to laugh. You're talking about how refined these guys are in their interviews and the way that they talk. And I can't remember which defensive back it was. I'd have to look at my notes. But I walked past a podium today, and this young man is talking about, and he's getting peppered with questions about, I think it was a Georgia defensive back, and he's getting peppered with questions about the difference between Philadelphia swag and Georgia swag.
Okay.
And I was like, well, okay, this interview has gone off the rails.
The young man from Auburn, DJ, and I forget his last name. I still need my sheet in front of him. He's a cornerback, and he weighs 174 pounds, and that's after breakfast. You know, and I started talking to him. It's like, well, he's trying to get up to, I guess he said 185 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we started going over, well, what's your favorite kind of pasta?
Oh, I'll give him the 10 pounds.
I would hand him the 10 pounds, and he's like, well, my favorite pasta is chicken Alfredo with shrimp. He's somebody from the coast down there, the Gulf Coast. They have amazing shrimp down there. And he's like, and I love that. And he's like, yeah, and of course, I love my mom's spaghetti. My mom makes the best spaghetti in the world. And I look at him, and I want to say, then how come you only weigh 174 pounds?
You know, it is funny, though, because today, as we're sitting here in the lobby, today is the first day of the actual on-field workouts.
Yes, minutes from
and you know, media has only had access to go to those workouts, except for select media who used to get to go to the quarterback workouts.
Yeah.
But we've only had access to those for the last couple of years. And I have to admit, they don't do anything for me. They just don't, because we sit about a mile away in Lucas Oil And we watch guys in shorts run, just run,
right,
basically. And I don't know, for me, my favorite part of this is not the workouts. It's not what people see on TV. Mm-hmm. It's talking to these kids. It's getting to know these kids. It's talking to other folks in the media and catching up and you know, and trading stories and all of that. And I don't know, you kind of feel the same way?
I feel the same way. And I love when it's a smaller podium. It's not one of the first round picks. And these kids can start talking about themselves. And, you know, in terms of the workouts, yeah, I had a good experience with a couple other journalists last year at the workouts, but it was because, like, the four of us were in a cluster, and it was super collegial, because you're so far away, you're not sure who the kid is. You're looking at a number. And, like, so one of the guys, okay, DL24 is, what's his name, from Tulane. Like, okay, so we know who it is. And then we can all share thoughts. It's like, oh, you know, you can see he took a false step there. Like, there's no way that rep was as quick as the last guy's rep. And so we could actually get something out. But we all needed to have a piece of the puzzle, because you're right, we're really far away. I don't know if he ever did the quarterback throwing. But
I have not.
They would put us in one of the luxury boxes. They would basically take our phones away. You'd have to, like, if your phone came out, it had to go away. And, like, so I had to write, like, with a pencil on, like, the back of an envelope what was going on with
these. Oh, my God.
And you're sitting so far away that it's hard to get any sense of what you're looking at. So you see, you know, Johnny Manziel, like, throw a bomb, you know, or something like that. It's like, well, I guess that looked good against air. So, but I enjoy having that. But you're right. I get a lot out of coming here. And, like, you can hear where these kids are and where they're coming from. And you can get a sense of who they are.
And it's funny because, you know, you mentioned the kids who are off at the side podiums, and nowadays there aren't as many of those. Like, this week there are kids at podiums, and then there are a few guys at smaller podiums off to the side.
Yeah.
But back in the day, years ago, they used to have
the tables.
They'd have the podium, and then they'd have tables,
mm-hmm,
and they'd just have a bunch of guys scattered around the tables.
Yes.
And I think my favorite story of talking to guys here at the Combine was This was when Joe Judge was Giants head coach. Okay. This was his first year as Giants head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And in his introductory press conference,
oh, gosh,
Joe talked about wanting, and you know, Joe talked a better game than he coached.
And I remember him saying, "Yeah, we don't have any starters. I'm not going to discuss starters." You say, "What about Saquon?" Well, I don't know. I'm not going to talk about anybody. And
he wouldn't use Daniel Jones's name.
Yes,
he's like, "We have a quarterback, but he wouldn't use Daniel Jones's name."
That was so crazy.
We should have known at that point that this was going to be an adventure.
Just fire him now.
But he talked about somebody asked him about hiring a coaching staff, hiring his assistant coaches.
Okay.
And what Joe should have said is, "I'm just going to call up all my buddies."
Right.
I'm just
going to
call up all my buddies and put them on the coaching staff, because that's what he did. But what he said was, "I want guys who can teach."
Yeah.
He said, "I don't want guys who know football but can't explain football."
Right.
He said, "I don't care if you're talking about a peanut butter and jelly sandwich." He said, I want guys who can tell me how to make the best peanut butter and jelly sandwich in the world. So I came to the combine that year. I came to the combine a few weeks after listening to Judge say that. And I went over to the tables and I started asking guys how to make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Oh, that's great.
And it's the best thing I think I've ever done, because they were like, their eyes got big,
uh-huh,
and they all went into this great detail about what kind of bread you use,
so you cut
and how you cut it, and do you cut the crust off, and how much peanut butter you use, and how much jelly you use, and what kind.
Right.
And it was amazing.
Right.
But for me, that's the best part of the combine, is those kinds of stories.
Right, and you used to especially be able to do that at the tables. I remember one time at the tables, the two University of Miami wide receivers were at the same table, and they thought it was funny to switch their name tags. And I asked one of, like, two or three questions, and then they start busting up. It's like, "Oh, I'm not Williams, I'm Johnson." And,
mm-hmm,
and I was like, and they start, I crack up, and it's like, "Do you really think I was going to be able to tell? I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, you guys wear helmets. You understand that, right?"
It's funny because we're at a podium yesterday,
mm-hmm,
and we're talking to edge rushers.
Right.
And two of the edge guys who had already completed their interviews crashed this guy's podium session.
Yeah.
They crashed his podium session and started
asking
him questions.
This kid from Houston Baptist College or whatever that is. Yeah,
might have been. But they crashed his podium session and started just firing questions at him. And after a while, he's like, "Guys, I have to talk to these other people."
Right. That's great. That's great. Yeah, you go and, like, you would sit down at this table and there might be one other person there and you have a normal conversation with a normal human being. And if it's a kid, and if you research the kid's story, a lot of times there's a lot going on in their lives, or there's a lot of unique stories there, and you would get it. Now, if you try to go to that section, and you know this, there's now a barrier that puts you about 10 feet away from even these lower-level prospects. You have to shout the questions at them.
Right.
And they're next to each other, and the speakers that their microphones are coming out of are, like, as far away as your car speakers are on the left and right door.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be trying to talk to the quiet kid in front of you, and the loud, boisterous kid to the right is all you're hearing, especially when you go to your recorder later. And that's why, mm-hmm, so you get this, that was a good question, and my thought is, and the kid next to you is like, "Oh, yeah, I love football, blah, blah, blah." And it's like, I just wasted my time.
Absolutely. And, you know, I find, and I don't know if you have the same experience, but it's the same now actually covering players who are on these teams. When you get to these teams, you can't really get close to these guys.
No.
You can't really get to know these guys. Right. I know you're everywhere you go around an NFL team, you're escorted by somebody from PR or security or whatever. But I do find that on the rare occasions that you can corner a guy and get to have a conversation, it's always the guy who's at the bottom of the roster.
Of course.
It's always the guy who's the practice squad player.
Right.
It's always the guy who's the undrafted free agent
who is
thrilled to talk to you.
Right.
And if you know his story a little bit,
right,
those are the best stories to tell.
It is. I mean, it's a shame. I mean, the good news for these young man is that they are paid at the high level. You know, these high-level players are paid more money than we see in, like, 25 years to play a year or two, et cetera. That's the good news. The bad news is they have to constantly shield themselves from any of the criticism that can come and, like, get into their phones and get into their wives' phones and their dad's phones and their mom's phones when something goes wrong. And so when they see the media, they come at us with this trepidation of the potential that we're going to put something on blast that they don't, that they misspoke or whatever, and they come to look at us as somebody that has to be at arm's length. And we brought that on ourselves a little bit, but the degree to which now that it's gatekept is ridiculous. We used to go to the Senior Bowl, and you'd get the kids at the Senior Bowl very informally. Now it's hard to get them there informally. At the colleges, I'm sure that they keep them in lock and key from what I hear what goes on in access in colleges. And it becomes cyclical where these kids become more insular. So they're used to being like, well, the media is a bunch of gadflies, you know. Like,
well, I know that,
and we get to be like, oh, this is our 5 minutes with them. Let's get them. Let's get everything we can from them, and let's see if we can get the truth out of them. And like, neither of that is healthy.
Right, and that doesn't happen in those scrums either. And I know you mentioned the college kids, and I know the college kids come to the NFL, and as first year players, they're like, you guys are allowed in our locker room?
Right. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't. I know you don't do that in Georgia. You don't do that wherever. And then at a smaller program, the press pool is one local writer and the kid who writes for the university paper. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to worry about that. And like, you never see a reporter. Mm-hmm. You know. So it's like 50-50. But no, that's the way it is now. And I've seen it change over the last 8-9 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a change for the better.
No, I'm so jealous of the guys like Jay Glazer and Steve Serby, who's been a columnist at the Post, New York Post, forever and ever. The guys who could build relationships with some of these people long ago, before all of this was in place, because you just can't now.
You hear stories from guys who are still here, guys that we all know, talking about, well, back in the day, you come to Indianapolis and you'd go into the... Les Bowen was writing about it. He's got a blog. And, you know, Andy Reid would bring you into his suite. And there'd be, like, six of the reporters in the suite. And you'd do, like, 15, 20 minutes. And it's not like he would, like, spill the beans on anything real that was going on. But you are at least relationship building. You're chit-chatting a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we can still do that at 3 in the morning at the bar, etc. But everything else has been, like, locked down to such a degree that you don't get that kind of trusting, convivial relationship in any way or anything even approaching it.
Absolutely. And, you know, let's switch gears a little bit and actually talk about the team that I cover. Let's talk about the Giants a little bit. And I know, because I've been reading your stuff ever since the Football Outsiders days, you've had your fun at the expense of the Giants over the years. You most certainly have had your fun at the expense of the Giants, who have probably deserved it.
Most of the time.
Most of the time. But I'm just curious, you know, where you are these days in your own thoughts on where the Giants are, what they need to do. You know, they've got the Daniel Jones situation going on. Saquon Barkley might or might not be back. Just your thoughts on the state of the Giants.
You know, last year at this time, coming off the winning season they had, I was very optimistic about Joe Sheen and about Brian Daboll and about Kafka and everything they were doing there. And as they started making decisions, I didn't hate any of the decisions. It's like, okay, we're re-signing Daniel Jones. You look at last year's quarterback market, and you look at where they re-signed him at. They didn't give him $260 million or anything like that. Like, I understand what you're doing there. Okay, you're going to franchise Saquon to just kind of give yourself a professional at running back for a year, even if it's at a high price, while you work things out. Things went so awry, really awry this year, where you have guys like Evan Neal taking the step back, where you have the entire offensive line collapsing, where you don't really see the step-up players from the receivers. And, of course, then you get Jones playing poorly behind that line, which was a mitigating circumstance, and then getting hurt. And then there was drama and friction among the coaching staff, and I don't know where it's at right now. So last year I was like, oh, okay, you're going to be fine with a year of Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley as you figure things out. You're not going to be fine with that right now. And I think it's to the credit of what I was hearing on the podiums that, like, there's a recognition that quarterback has to be solved, and there's a recognition that we're not going to put $12 million in front of Saquon for another year. We're not going to put $60 million for 3 years in front of a running back who is as good as the line around him, basically. And I think they have to move in that direction. It's just been painfully slow.
Right. Let's talk about Jones for a minute. I think you're where I was with Daniel Jones, coming off a playoff year where he played well, even if he didn't throw a million touchdown passes.
Right.
He played well.
Right.
He did what was asked. He won games late. He won a playoff game where he threw for more than 300 yards.
Right.
I felt like the Giants had no choice but to bring him back. I felt like the contract was right in that it was a deal with a two-year out.
Yes.
And for me, the way I look at it is sometimes you make the right decision and sometimes it still goes wrong.
Right. And that's why we said it was the right deal because there's a two-year out. So as we look at this year, it's like, well, this is the second year, and you might need the out. If you draft a rookie right now, you're only paying Daniel Jones for this year, and that was the risk mitigating factor, and that made sense the way they do it. But I was in the same place. It's like, you know, here you have a guy who runs very well, who throws a pretty good deep ball, and is a yes, sir, how high should I jump coach guy. So, like, there's enough there to say we can bring him back for another year in a quarterback class last year that wasn't spectacular. When you're picking where they pick 18th, 19th, 20th overall, they made that choice. But they put in that out, so now they can make these other decisions. It wouldn't be as bad if you weren't looking at an offensive line that was a shambles and a skill position core that, like, I still think needs a pretty significant overhaul.
Right, and in terms of Saquon, I look at it like there's a price point, but it's very difficult for that to be a big price point because I look at Saquon as a guy who I know what his name says, but he's not the player that he was 5 years ago. I look at him as a 27-year-old who's had a lot of leg injuries at this point, who's a depreciating asset, who might be good for you for the next couple of years, but he's not going to be the Saquon, you know, jumping over tall buildings guy anymore.
and I keep looking at this because, you know, they're doing the same thing with Josh Jacobs in Las Vegas. They're doing the same thing with Tony Pollard. They're doing the same thing with Derrick Henry, who's like a level above that. I don't know if they've officially released him yet, but he's going to be on the market. Austin Eckler. And I keep looking at this world where all of them just like musical chairs. Like, oh, Tony Pollard is now a Giant, and Saquon is now a Raider, and Josh Jacobs is now a Cowboy, but they're all signing like 2 years at like $14 million contracts because that's where with incentives, because that's where the market is right now. And that's what, you know, as a Giants fan who's like loved Saquon for years and remembers what he was as a rookie, you got to get your head around. That's where it's going. That's where it's going. Paying him $75 million will not turn him into a $75 million running back. It'll turn into the headache you have 2 or 3 years, or 1 year, or 6 months down the line when he's hurt and he's not playing to his billing.
Right. Fans always tend to romanticize what a guy was, what he used to be.
Yeah. I joke about this about Giants fans. Like, you guys are crazy with Saquon. You guys have, like, a Saquon mania or something like that. There's been nobody else to really get excited and root for in the last, 6, 7 years, you know? Daniel Jones has never really been that guy. You know, how excited are you going to be about Kayvon Thibodeau, you know, like, or Andrew Thomas? He's a tackle. Yeah, we have a great tackle. You need somebody you can buy the jersey of and things, and Saquon has kind of been it, but, like, that's not a reason to pay him moving forward and possibly mess your cap situation up.
Absolutely. All right, Mike, I think that's a good place for us to wrap it up. I know we talked a little bit about you starting your own venture these days. Why don't you tell folks about that and tell them where they can find you on social media, all that good stuff.
I am on Substack now, and it's called the Two Deep Zone on Substack. Come check it out. I'm going to be covering the entire NFL. A little bit of jokes, a little bit of stats, a lot of historical perspective, a lot of, like, big picture perspective. NFL coverage the way we used to do it years and years and years ago, where we didn't have to chop everything into tiny, tiny little bites and jump up and down on TV and make a big spectacle out of ourselves. So it's Two Deep Zone at Substack, and you can find me at Mike Tanier, that's T-A-N-I-E-R, and you can find me on X, you can find me on Threads, you can find me on Blue Sky.
Wow, Blue Sky.
Oh, Blue Sky, yeah. I don't do much football. I'm, like, talking about comic books on Blue Sky.
There you go.
But I'm there, and I post my articles there so you can see what's happening.
You and I are slowly moving to Threads, though.
Yes, we are trying. It's a better environment for the follower, for the reader, for the user. You can find your people again. If you're having a hard time finding your favorite journalists or whoever on Twitter, X, whatever it's called, look elsewhere. They might be there.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
All right, Giants fans, that's our show for today. Thank you, as always, for listening. Please stay safe out there. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.